Want to make a difference in your community but not sure how? Go to GoFundMe.com right now and start a GoFundMe. Seriously. Your next fundraiser doesn't have to start in a school parking lot or a church basement. You can start a GoFundMe today in just minutes. Fundraise for yourself, a friend, or family member, or an organization. All that matters is that you care about them. GoFundMe is the trusted place to fundraise for what you care about. With no pressure to hit your fundraising goal, but tons of tools to help you reach it, you can confidently start fundraising right now. Whether it's creative, local, or critical, your cause matters. And there's a reason why GoFundMe is backed by millions and chosen by fundraisers everywhere. It works, and it matters. GoFundMe helps you make a real difference. Start your GoFundMe today at GoFundMe.com. That's GoFundMe.com. GoFundMe.com. This is a commercial message brought to you by GoFundMe.
This is Polyphonic Press. The podcast where two music fans pick a classic album completely at random.
All right, hey, welcome to Polyphonic Press. I'm Jeremy Boyd.
And I'm John Van Dyke.
And let's not waste any time. We've got the patented random album generator right in front of us here. So let's hit the button and see what album we're going to be listening to this week. And the album we're going to be listening to is XTC Skylarking.
Okay, that should be fun.
Here's a description of the album. It says, released in 1986, Skylarking stands as one of XTC's most celebrated and cohesive works. A shimmering pastoral pop masterpiece that marries the band's sharp songwriting with lush orchestral production. Produced by Todd Rundgren, the album was conceived as a conceptual song cycle tracing the arc of an English summer's day, paralleling the stages of life from youthful innocence to adult disillusionment and beyond. The music is a sun-dappled blend of Baroque pop, psychedelia, and classic British songwriting, evoking the melodic sophistication of the Beatles, the Beach Boys, and the Kinks, while remaining distinctly XTC in tone and wit. Songs like Grass and Season Cycle celebrate nature's rhythms and sensuality, while Dear God, originally a B-side, later a U.S. hit, offers biting social commentary and existential questioning. Lyrically, frontman Andy Partridge and bassist Colin Moulding explore themes of love, faith, time, and the bittersweet beauty of everyday life. Rundgren's layered arrangements give the album continuous, almost cinematic flow, each track melting into the next like scenes in a pastoral dream. Over time, Skylarking has been reappraised as one of the finest British albums of the 1980s, and many fans regard it as XTC's crowning achievement, a radiant and wistful meditation on life, nature, and the passage of time. All right.
Yeah, I like XTC.
So yes, this was released on the 27th of October, 1986. The genres are pop, rock, and psychedelic. And there are 14 tracks on the album, and side one and side two is split pretty evenly, 7 and 7. So if you're listening along, which we do encourage you to do, we've linked the album to both Spotify and Apple Music, and what we do is we take the halfway part mark of the album and discuss it sort of at halftime, basically. And the album starts with Summer's Cauldron, and side one ends with Season Cycle. So if you want to stop halfway there and listen to the discussion. All right, so without further ado, here is the first track on the album, Summer's Cauldron. So here we go.
Summer's cauldron, under mats of flower lava. Please don't pull me out, this is how I would want to go. Breathing in the boiling butter, fruit of sweat and golden
and ending side one with Season Cycle. Yeah, I really like this so far. It definitely doesn't sound like the 80s at all.
Not really, no.
Yeah, it's really, I don't know what to say about it. It's really interesting. Just really interesting.
Well, it's definitely got that psychedelic pop sound going that was like really, it's a very 60s kind of album, actually. I'm kind of surprised that they released this one as XTC and not as the Dukes of Stratosphere in a lot of ways.
What's the Dukes of Stratosphere?
The Dukes of Stratosphere is their like pseudo band. And they do basically like, they do music that sounds like it's straight out of the 60s.
Okay.
The first album came out, I think it was like 85, and the other one was 87. They only put out the two albums. There's lots of great songs on it. And this one's 86, so it's like right smack in the middle of it. And you can really hear that they were in that kind of mood for those 3 years.
Cool. So it's sort of like how Green Day has the Foxborough Hot Tubs when they're sort of doing it slightly different. Okay, that's interesting. Yeah, because I've heard earlier XTC stuff, and it's not quite like this. It's very different.
They've always had a little bit of that 60s tinge to them, but this is like really kind of, you know, they really drenched it on for this album.
Yeah, and like that last song, Season Cycle, that sounds like the Beach Boys. That song could have been on Pet Sounds, with the harmonies and the way it's structured and
moving round and round, pushing life up from a cold dead ground. It's growing green. It's growing green.
And, you know, there's some Beatles stuff sprinkled in there as well. Yeah, it is interesting. I wonder, like, maybe they were just that that other band that they had, the Dukes of
Stratosphere.
Dukes of Stratosphere, yeah. I wonder if maybe they were, they just sort of were experimenting and just sort of, well, let's try it with this other band, and well, okay, that worked. Let's do it with our main project.
Maybe, but the Dukes of Stratosphere was always a very underground sort of thing.
Oh, okay.
It didn't become like popular or anything like that. I mean, those who know about it love it, but it's definitely flies under the radar of a lot of things. I didn't discover it until, I don't know, maybe 10 years ago or something like that.
Oh, okay.
But it's right up my alley for sure. I'm sure it's up yours too.
Cool. Yeah, I'll have to check that out for sure. But, you know, and then the way that I'm saying, like, it doesn't, like, the production doesn't even sound like the 80s. Like, even stuff that from the 80s that's, like, 60s inspired still
has this, it's like that post punk sort of 80s thing, like the Smiths or something like that.
Right, exactly. Yeah, this doesn't have that at all.
But some of the instrumentation doesn't really sound like the 60s either.
No, what I was going to say is it sounds like if we take a look at how like the nostalgia cycle happens, is usually people start to
about 20 years.
Yeah, people start to get nostalgic for a decade about 20 years after the decade ends or at right like people started to get nostalgic for the 60s in around the mid 80s. And then it goes for 10 years and it usually hits its peak at the 30 year mark. I think 60s nostalgia really hit its peak with like the Austin Powers movies, and then you know, and then you had like in the 90s you had 70s nostalgia with like that 70s shows, and there was a couple movies set in the 70s, and then it really hit its peak around like 2005, and then you know it just keeps going on and on and on. What I was gonna say is this sounds like when the nostalgia first starts to happen around the 20-year mark, so let's say 1985, this is 86, this sounds like 90s, 60s nostalgia. Like the production and the way it sounds, it's almost like this was the blueprint for 60s sounding bands from like 1994. Even though this is okay. 8 years before that, like the production, yeah. The production specifically is what I'm talking about. Like the way the drums are mixed and the way the guitars sound, it's almost like this was like, okay, if you want to make a 60s inspired album, but using modern recording equipment, this is what it will sound like.
Yeah, kind of. Yeah. I mean, they don't sound like Smash Mouth at all, but I know what you mean.
Yeah, but like the I'm thinking of bands more like I don't even know. It's a certain sound that maybe a little bit of Sloan.
Okay, yeah.
A little bit of Sloan, like me, their second album, Twice Removed. The drums sound very similar to this. You know, and I always listen to the drums to see what the production sounds like, because the drums are really, they sort of set the atmosphere, and you can,
they really do.
You put a microphone right up to a guitar amp. It doesn't really matter what room you recorded in, but the drums, like, they sort of set the atmosphere of what the album is going to sound like. And so that's sort of my barometer of what, like decades, like 70s drums are like dead and dry, and for the most part, there's exceptions, but you know, that's sort of the typical 70s sound. And then, but this is, the drums sound very like mid 90s to me, even though this was like 1980. So it's like, it's ahead of its time for 60s inspired music, yeah. If that makes any sense. Yeah.
It's ahead of its time for an album that seems to be sort of behind the times.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
Intentionally behind the time. I mean, they're obviously hearkening back to the 60s. And it was successful. The people love this album, apparently. It's a really popular one of theirs.
Yeah. I think it's probably their most popular one, at least in North America. I mean, I know they're big in England. They're a British band, but like I think the song that's on here, Dear God.
Yeah, it was a big hit. Amazingly,
yeah. Especially in the 80s.
In the 80s in the States, it's very that song is I think it would probably piss off a lot of people in the States, but it's a good song. It's really poignant. It's still poignant.
And it's, even more so today than it was in 1986. And songs like, A Thousand Umbrellas. And so it is a concept album, which had actually sort of fallen out of fashion by the mid 80s. But it's, the concept is sort of going through, a human life from cradle to grave, and it's sort of like A Thousand Umbrellas, that was a pretty like
it sounds so bright and cheery,
in the middle of this bright and cheery album, it's like, oh, this is kind of a downer. It's like, where did this come from? But it's sort of like going through, and I think it's sort of like adolescence, when it's kind of angsty and sort of you're figuring yourself out. So yeah, it's interesting that not only are they doing a 60s inspired album, but they're also sort of bringing back the concept album. Like I was even hearing some stuff like that could have been from The Who on Tommy.
Right. Yes. There's definitely a little bit of something like that. Or I'm sort of even thinking of Days of Future Past by the Moody Blues or something like that. Without, you know, the orchestral mellotron in it. But still, that kind of through the day sort of thing and that pop sensibility in the songwriting and stuff like that.
Yeah, exactly. It's kind of everything all happening all at the same time.
Yeah, it's really well done. I mean, and we're only halfway through it, so.
And you know, a lot of that is Todd Rundgren, who's producing the thing, and he's he produced Bat Out of Hell from Meatloaf. So he's known for producing, on top of doing his own stuff, he's known for producing these sort of epic sounding albums, these sort of like big concept records. And so I think that's probably why they got him to do this.
Probably. I've always kind of liked Todd Rundgren's approach to stuff. And yeah, even in the 70s, he was still doing stuff like covering stuff from the 60s and stuff like that. He's really a child of the 60s, that guy. You can definitely hear it in the stuff he produces.
Not only his production, but in his own music as well. He sort of carried the tradition. I mean, he had the band The Nazz in the 60s, but when that band broke up and he did his solo stuff, he didn't really... It's not that he didn't change with the times, but he just sort of... He kept doing his own thing. It was a natural progression. But I did manage to find a few pretty interesting facts about the album. The sessions were famously tense between Andy Partridge and producer Todd Rundgren.
Oh, okay.
So yeah. So although the results were really well done, apparently the process was not always pleasant. Although Skylarking sounds serene and harmonious, the recording process was anything but. Rundgren and Partridge frequently clashed over creative control, with Rundgren insisting on sequencing the songs into a thematic flow. Despite the tension, that sequencing became one of the album's defining strengths. Partridge later admitted that Rundgren's structure ultimately made the album work. You know, that's something sometimes... It's almost a double-edged sword, getting a producer in, because sometimes you need someone to sort of streamline your ideas. And if you're the artist, you can get sort of precious about your ideas and not wanting to relinquish much control. But, you know, and sometimes producers can get a little carried away and they want to make their own stamp on it. But it's a fine line between helping the artist realize their vision and sort of knowing when to get out of the way.
And the same thing goes to the producer. Sometimes the producer has to know when to get out of the way too, of the artist. Yeah.
You know, there's no shortage of stories of artists and producers clashing over their vision of what the album should or shouldn't be.
But yeah, every once in a while, you get one of those albums where the producer and the artist are just on the same page. I'm thinking of like Rick Rubin and Tom Petty on Wildflowers. They just seem to be locked in with each other, and the album just blossomed. It just, you know, I'm not saying there weren't difficulties in producing the album. It was going to be a double album, but when they put it out, I mean, it's a brilliant album.
Yeah, and you know, it's also an exercise in, like, there's of course there's always going to be conflict. It's all in how you deal with the conflict. Moving on to number two, "Dear God," which actually is their biggest hit, was not originally included on the album. The now famous song "Dear God" was initially left off the UK release because the band worried its atheistic lyrics might be too controversial. After college radio stations in the U.S. began playing it from a B-side, the track gained so much attention that it was added to later pressings, replacing Mermaid Smiled. So yeah, so even the band were worried that, well, maybe we're saying too much.
The song is a little too bleak. Yeah, but yeah, it's the thing is, like, sometimes an idea that's might seem a little out there is the one that actually resonates with people, because a lot of people are thinking the same thing, you know, be it good or bad. It's sometimes that's what will connect with people.
Yeah, exactly. And it definitely makes sense that it first caught on college radio. Like that makes perfect sense. 'Cause you know, XTC is sort of like, I don't know if this is true, but I always sort of, I don't know a whole lot about the band, but I always sort of saw them as like the British REM.
Yeah, in a way, sometimes. Yeah, very intellectual in a lot of ways, but also with this great pop sensibility and around the same period and everything. Yeah, I could definitely see the parallels between the two.
And number three, the album's theme follows the cycle of life, like we talked about before. Rundgren designed Skylarking as a concept album that moves through the stages of human life, from youthful innocence, Summer's Cauldron and Grass, to adulthood and reflection, Earn Enough for Us and Dear God, mirroring the passage of a day from sunrise to sunset. The cover art has its own story and controversy. The original UK cover, featuring stylized nude figures surrounded by flora, was considered too risque for some markets. Later versions replaced it with a more subdued image of flowers. However, in recent reissues, the band restored the original design, calling it more in tune with the album's themes of nature, growth, and sensuality.
That's what we're looking at here.
It's just two people playing the flute, it looks like. Like, I don't think it's that.
No. It looks like, you know, an engraving from an old pot or something like that. That's what it kind of looks like to me. It looks like ancient art or something like that. Yeah, just sort of placed in this turquoise, I don't know what you call it, vignette. I don't know. Some people get their, you know, panties in a twist over some pretty mundane stuff.
Yes, they do. finally, the album was the start of XTC's studio only era. By the time of Skylarking, XTC had stopped touring due to Andy Partridge's stage fright and anxiety. This album marked the full embrace of the band as a studio project, allowing them to focus on intricate arrangements and sonic experimentation without worrying about live performance limitations.
So they kind of pulled the Beatles there for slightly different reasons, but yes.
A couple of different reasons. Yeah, I was reading, they resumed touring around 1992 or so. So it was like 5 or 6 years that they weren't really touring. So yeah, and around this time they focused on mostly just putting out studio stuff, and with the idea that the songs were never going to be played live.
At least not for a while. Yeah. You know, between either, you know, Andy Partridge decides he wants to go on tour, or the technology catches up with it that they can play it live, you know, that sort of thing, which I guess ultimately is what they did. I guess it also gave them a little bit extra time to do the Dukes of Stratosphere stuff.
Yeah, that is true. They gave them time to explore different projects, and I don't know if they did any solo stuff or anything, yeah, so those are some facts that I found about the album. But I guess we'll get back into the second side, and it starts with Earn Enough for Us. All right, and ending the album with Dear God, which was a late addition to the album. Yeah, I love this album. I it's great. The songwriting, the production, the performances, it's lush without being overproduced. I really like it.
I really like this one too. Yeah, this is a really good album. I know we've got it around here somewhere. Somehow I never put it on. I don't know why, but I probably will come to it. I have no idea why I miss. Maybe sometimes I had a bit of a bias between anything that was released in like the mid 80s, like just because I expected certain things from it that I didn't really like hearing too much. I'm a lot more open-minded about it now.
Yeah, well, me too. I think doing this podcast has sort of made me more open-minded to hearing stuff from the 80s than I would have otherwise, yeah. But even though I know where you were going is this doesn't sound like the 80s, and this doesn't sound like what you would expect the 80s to sound like.
No. And I've come around to appreciating some of the stuff that does sound like the 80s. But yeah, it just sort of fell in that window of stuff that I just go, I don't really feel like putting myself through that. It's a brilliant album. It's really something that I wish I'd put on earlier. But yeah, it's a really good one.
Better late than never, you know? It is interesting. I was reading a few different things and just doing a little more research. This we were talking about earlier, the song Dear God, and how surprising it was that it was such a hit. It wasn't without controversy, though. and the band was correct. You know, I don't think it was a mistake to leave it off the album or not release it, but they were correct in thinking that it's going to ruffle some feathers. So this is just from Wikipedia. It says the song's anti-religious message inspired some violent incidents in Florida. A Panama City radio station received a bomb threat for playing the song. And in New York, at Binghamton High School, a student forced his school to play the song over its public address system while holding a faculty member at knife point. Some British shops refused to carry the single. Partridge also received a plethora of hate mail, all from the U.S. He commented, "I really felt sorry for the people who got so upset at someone expressing an opinion that might be contrary to their beliefs, or at who might have another take on their beliefs. How could that make them so violent, potentially?" That was 40 years ago, and things have not changed.
It's sort of unfortunate, because it's really not that extreme to... Well, I guess if you're like a deeply devout, and it probably is sort of extreme, but these are like ideas that float around that a lot of people think.
Dear God, hope you got the letter, and I pray you can make it better down here. I don't mean a big reduction in the price of beer. All the people that you made in your image, see them starving on their feet, 'cause they don't get enough to eat from God. Can't believe in you.
Dear God, sorry to disturb you, but I feel that I should be loud and clear. We all need a big reduction in a mind. Fighting in the street.
but it's just, it's crazy that people have such a visceral reaction to a radio station playing a song and they receive a bomb threat. Like, and it's not even telling people to go be an atheist. This is the second part of it. Although Partridge is an atheist, he believes that heaven and hell exist metaphorically. Season Cycle, another song from Skylarking, included the couplet, "Everybody says join our religion, go to heavens. I say no thanks. Why bless my soul? I'm already there." He returned to the biblical themes of For Garden of Earthly Delights, a children's guide to the world that served as an opening track on the follow-up album Oranges and Lemons, explaining the lyric, "Do what you want to do, just don't hurt anybody." He said, I'm sure that's what heaven is, really. Heaven is not hurting anyone. And he said, "I felt sorry for the people who got so upset at someone expressing an opinion that might be contrary to their beliefs." And he said, like, the song is, it's about somebody who is agnostic, and they're just writing a letter to God saying, "Hey, can you please make Earth better?" Because that's really what the song is about. That's what the song is. And it's crazy that is so controversial to say, "Hey, God, could you, we're kind of having a bad time down here. Could you, like, do something to make it better?" So, yeah, so, but so, just for that, I love this band already. I mean, you know, but I guess that's a good segue. What would be your three favorite tracks from the album?
What was that first one called again? Because that was a really good
Summer's
opener.
Cauldron.
Summer's Cauldron. Yeah, that was a really good opener. I also liked Earn Enough for Us, the second side opener. That was a really good one with that Rickenbacker ringing away in it. Yeah, I like that. It's so tough. It's a really good album. But yeah, Dear God's got that. It says a lot. I might have to go with it. That might be a controversial choice.
Yeah, I think Dear God definitely is one of mine. And I think, yeah, Earn Enough for Us, I really like that as well. Those would be two of mine. And then Grass. I really like Grass. I like that they're sort of like...
They bled together, yeah.
So, yeah, so those would be my picks. But I think I know the answer to this. But would you listen to the album again?
Yes, I'd listen to this album again. Absolutely. This is a good album.
Yeah, me too. It's this is a great album. It's great, and Todd Rundgren is right. I think the sequencing of the album really works to tell the story of a human life from cradle to grave. But even if you didn't know that, it flows as a story. Even if you don't know all the details of the story, it still, you sort of feel the arc. So yeah, it's really well done. So yeah, so I guess we'll end the episode there. Thank you so much if you made it this far. We'd love to hear from you if you agree or disagree with our assessment of the album. You can do that by going to the website, go to the contact page, polyphonicpress.com/contact. And while you're on the website, you can check out all the past episodes that we've done. And be sure to check out the Patreon. You can go to patreon.com/polyphonicpress, where you can get these episodes the day before they go live. You can get a shout out during these episodes, and you can even pick an album for us to review. And just click the support the show link in the description of this episode. And if you're listening and this is your first time, follow the show. We would love to have you on board and discover lots of these albums along with us. But I think that just about does it. I'm Jeremy Boyd.
And I'm John Van Dyke.
Take it easy.